Genealogy by Tim, Season 6, Episode 3, recorded March 30th, 2026. I'm Tim of Genealogy by Tim G. The website is genealogybytim.com. You can email me at tim@genealogybytim.com. I've got mostly tech stuff this month, since it's World Backup Day tomorrow. I finally pressed my second server machine to its intended use as a backup server. And QGIS, the open source professional mapping software, released version 4.0 earlier this month. I used the software extensively last summer to map Hogendobler land purchases and sales in Lancaster County. All that and more coming up on Genealogy by Tim. You may recall it was almost exactly a year ago that my server was down for 2 weeks. Pressed the power button and nothing happened, and I thought, is this server broken? Is it dead? Do I need a new one? Or is it just a faulty power cable? So I went ahead and bought a second server machine, identical to my original server machine. And I thought, well, let's just try plugging in the first machine with the power cord from the second machine, see if it lights up. If it lights up, then guess what? I have a second computer, a second server machine that I can use as a backup server. And if it doesn't light up, well, I can recycle the original machine and replace it with the second machine. So when I got that power cable plugged into the original machine, it lit right up. No problem. Seems like the problem was the faulty power cable. So I bought a second power cable, plugged in the new machine, and then I had two server computers. So I went ahead and purchased a new NVMe drive, some new RAM for the new computer, cloned the hard drive of the original computer to the new NVMe drive, and after some minor adjustments, I fired up a second server that was intended to be used as a backup server. And it was a good backup server for a few weeks, running on the cloned hard drive. But I did not make a backup since then. It's been a year since I made a backup. It's terrible stewardship of my web server. Good thing we didn't have any catastrophic failures. But the reason it took so long for me to do another backup of my original server is that I really wasn't sure how, other than to turn off both servers, take the NVMe drive out of the second server, put it in an enclosure, and clone the hard drive from the first server onto the second server, and then make several adjustments so that the NVMe drive would boot after it's installed on the second server. And that was a lot of work, and it would have caused significant downtime. So it never got done. And I recorded several podcasts since then, and I updated my WebTrees family tree several times since then, and no updates went over to the backup server. Well, that all changed last week with World Backup Day approaching. It's actually tomorrow, March 31st. I encourage all of you to take the pledge and back up your software. But I came across an article from the XDA website entitled, "rsync is the only backup tool you actually need." And I thought, you know what? I really should try to make this thing work. I really should try to set up a little system where updates to my website could be sent directly over to my backup server without the need to disassemble it. Now, there are fancy software applications that are used to manage backups, but I thought I could start simply with rsync, and rsync simply syncs, as the name implies, a given folder and a given destination. More sophisticated backup software gives more flexibility, gives more options, has a fancier interface. A common example of this, which I haven't tried yet, is the combination of RESTIC and Backrest. And I may in the future experiment with that software to back up my server, but I thought, let's start simply. rsync is a fairly simple software, not too unlike a basic copy command. And I'm pretty familiar with copy commands. The cp command on the server copies a file or a folder from one location to another. The scp command will copy a file or a folder from one machine to another. SCP is in fact what I have been using for quite some time to copy these audio files, these podcast audio files, from my primary driver computer over to my server. But if you look at any sort of top 10 list of deprecated Linux commands, SCP is usually near the top, and most people who write these articles recommend that you start using rsync instead of SCP. So I said, you know what? You got this article here. Rsync is the only backup tool you actually need. I want to learn rsync. I want to back up my server. Let's get that done. So this was a project I worked on last weekend, and it went smoother than expected. There was one issue that I needed to solve with rsync, and that is how to ensure that files in root-owned folders were copied, because my web server configuration files are root-owned. My var www folder, which is where all my website files are stored, that's root-owned. So I want to just be able to copy root-owned files from one machine to another machine. And I wanted to use rsync to do that. So that took a little bit of extra setup beyond what was indicated in the article. So I did some more internet sleuthing, found a couple forum posts on the superuser website that gave instructions on how to set up passwordless login so that rsync could access my backup server without having to enter a password. Now, passwordless login doesn't just mean anyone walks in. What it means is there's a private key and a public key. Private key on the client side and a public key on the server side. And there has to be a match between the two computers in order for the login to occur. So I don't have to type a password. The password is kind of stored on each computer and sort of double-checked before access is granted. And I actually attempted this long, long ago, back when my server was still hosted on the old compact laptops. I wanted to do this just as a added security measure, have passwordless RSA key logins so that hackers out on the internet don't brute force my password and gain access to my server. And I had a really hard time with it. One thing I misunderstood about it is that the computer has software called the Privileged Access Management, or PAM. And PAM software, I think, has a lot to do with password security. So I thought, well, since I'm not using PAM anymore, or password access, to access these servers, I can just delete that software. And that turned out to be not true. There are other places in the computer where that is still used, and I kind of wrecked my computer a little bit by deleting that software. And I was kind of intimidated after that. It took me a while to restore my computer to functionality. So setting up the passwordless RSA key login was kind of intimidating for me after I had that negative experience attempting to do it. Turns out I shouldn't have uninstalled the PAM software. All I had to do was disable the use of PAM in the SSH configuration. And I found a couple very helpful YouTube videos how to do that. There's a gentleman named Tony out there who teaches tech, and his YouTube channel is called Tony Teaches Tech, and he has some very short, very clear YouTube videos on how to do just this sort of thing. Set up your server to use passwordless login, and then decide whether or not to allow root to log in. And here I do have root logging in because I do want to transfer root-owned files from one machine to another machine. So this was my project last week, and I got it all set up, and I was kind of proud of it, and I was able, for the first time since a year ago, when I set up the second server, I was able to back up files from my original server machine to my backup server machine, including data that is displayed on my Genealogy by Tune website and in my WebTrees family tree, as well as server configuration files, so that now this would be a good thing to test at some point. But with any luck, the backup server is fully functional, so that if my original server breaks down, all I've got to do is switch the IP address in my router from my original server to my backup server, and it should function just as the original server did. And then what is displayed on the website would depend on the length of time that has passed since my most recent backup. But I think, you know, since March 31st is the official World Backup Day, and it will have taken place after I've posted this episode of the podcast, I think I'll go ahead and back that right on up. So just another tip before going ahead and backing up your web server is that it's best to do if the server is stopped. That is, the Apache software, the Nginx software, and the MariaDB database software should all be stopped so they're in a static position as the data is copied over to the new server machine. What you don't want is for the copy process to begin in one state and then have some changes occur to the database as the material is being copied over, because then there's going to be an inconsistency on the destination server machine. So you just have to stop everything. Your website's going to have to be down for maintenance for a little bit, depending on how long it takes to transfer the content. But once all the content is transferred over, you can start your server software again and your database software, and you should be good to go. I think one thing I ought to do in the coming weeks is just test it out. What if I make my backup server the live server? Do you see everything that you should see? And if not, why not? But that is what I did last weekend. Kind of proud of what I was able to accomplish. And it makes my data safe in case of loss to have two different copies of it. Now, for World Backup Day, they recommend the 3-2-1 rule for backups. And this is, I'm reading off the AI overview from Google here, it says, the 3-2-1 backup rule is a foundational data protection strategy recommending you to keep three total copies of your data, one primary and two backups, stored on two different types of media, with one copy stored off-site. So you should have your primary data, you should have one backup that you have easy access to on a hard drive or somewhere, and then you should have one backup off-site. Okay, this new server kind of satisfies the local hard drive component of the 3-2-1 strategy. I should have an off-site copy of this, perhaps on the cloud somewhere, just in case, let's say, suppose the unthinkable happens and my apartment burns down. I don't have an off-site copy of my data yet, but getting rsync running to clone my original server data over to my backup server, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. So go ahead. World Backup Day is tomorrow, March 31st. Go ahead and back up your data with rsync or with whatever method you prefer. In other tech news, QGIS has released version 4.0, and this happened about 3 weeks ago. And the big advancement with this new version of QGIS is that it depends on Qt 6 rather than Qt 5, as was the case in the previous release, release 3.44.6. And this made the use of it a little bit inconvenient for me. I am a Gentoo Linux user. Gentoo Linux has deprecated Qt 5, so there really wasn't a way to natively install QGIS on my Gentoo computer and use the necessary plugins that I needed to get my mapping software done. Let me back up a minute. What is QGIS? QGIS is professional open source mapping software that I used a lot last summer to map late 18th and early 19th century land purchases to and from the Hogendobler family in West Hempfield Township, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, based on wills and deeds that described distances and directions of the borderlines of the land. And this allowed me to draw the boundaries of the land on a modern OpenStreetMap map so we can compare the land described in these wills and deeds with what is there now, currently. So we can go to the place and say, this is where my ancestors lived, this is the land of my people. So QGIS is what I used to do that. And as I was saying, I was using version 3.44, which depends on Qt 5, which is not supported by my operating system, so I had to use a Flatpak container on my computer to install QGIS and bring in the Qt 5 dependencies that my computer doesn't officially support, and it worked pretty well. I guess you could say the only minor inconvenience is that I have to update all my Flatpak separately from my natively installed software packages. But now with QGIS 4.0, that's no longer necessary. QGIS installs and runs natively on my Gentoo Linux installation with Qt 6 dependencies, and I've got it up and running. I've got my plugins updated so I can continue. Now, this may be something I'll enjoy doing for months to come, is going over not just Hogendobbler deeds, but any deeds. We're going back pretty far in history with the Hogendobblers, the Mummas, the Eisenbergers. I look forward to mapping out all their land, and maybe some land of some other family lines of mine, such as the Skelettas in Moon Township, one of the Pittsburgh suburbs, and maybe some of my more local Philadelphia area ancestors. Now, the project here, what took me a little while to get this thing running, is that Gentoo does not yet have an e-build for the 4.0 release of QGIS. Gentoo is still shipping the 3.44.6 version, but for those who use Gentoo and are familiar with it, it's not too much of a stretch to copy the 3.44.6 e-build over to a local repository, do a basic upgrade by renaming the file to 4.0, and in this case I had to disable some patches that applied to the old version. After disabling the patches, the software compiled, and I was up and running with QGIS 4 on my Gentoo computer in no time. Well, without much ado. Now, I'm sure that the maintainers of the QGIS package on Gentoo, which is the Gentoo Geosciences project, I'm sure that they are looking into this, and they are going to have the official e-build posted soon enough. And when they do update their e-build, I will switch over from my local repository e-build to the official one, and it'll be smooth sailing after that. I'm sure they'll update the patches, whatever it is they think needs to be modified for the Gentoo system. It'll probably work better once that's all taken care of. But for now, I've got QGIS 4.0 running on my Gentoo system and ready for more fun with mapping. Apologies to my genealogy-minded followers who aren't also tech people. This was a very tech-heavy, genealogy-light episode. One final note here is more of a genealogy interest. I did start in earnest work on the updated form for the PALS, Pennsylvania Ancestor Lineage Society, application for the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. I was nearing completion of this application last year when the society changed the format of their application form. And the most obvious change is that they changed the format from portrait to landscape, which is a great help because now there's more room per line to enter more detailed source information. But they also published new guidelines, a new checklist, things to make sure you have done before submitting your application to improve your odds of acceptance into the PALS, Pennsylvania Ancestors Lineage Society. I started work on that again earlier this month after several months of work on the Wetton line of Elizabeth, New Jersey, and some Anflick family research involving marriage records and artificial intelligence, which I'll tell you more about next month. I said, you know what? I'm ready. It's time. Let's get that PALS application started. So I've only got a few lines filled in, but guess what? This is spring break, and one of my goals for spring break is to make some substantial progress. Completing my PALS application, making sure my binder is updated and following the new guidelines and checklists, and hopefully within the next month or two, that will be ready for submission to the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. And I will be a member of the society with qualifying ancestor Nicholas Hogendobbler, who moved to America in the 1750s. I'll let you know how all that goes next month, but for now, I've been Tim of Genealogy by Tim G. The website is genealogybytim.com. The email address is tim@genealogybytim.com. Keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits.